Hey there, it's Joshua. Did you know 1A is possible because of you? Yes, you. When you give to your local NPR station before the year ends, you're building support for the NPR programs you have come to know, love, and depend on. Programs like 1A. And you're also supporting local journalism in your community. So don't wait. Donate. Do your part in sharing the conversation and supporting the public radio system with a year-end gift to your local NPR station. Just visit donate.npr.org/1A to give. And thanks. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. In Australia, catastrophic wildfires are raising concerns over the fate of the koala. The fires have reportedly threatened the marsupial's natural habitat significantly, and by some reports, the koala is, quote, functionally extinct. But behind the headlines and the viral videos, the truth is a little less clear. Here with us in studio to try and clear things up is Natasha Daly, a wildlife reporter for National Geographic. Natasha, welcome to 1A.
Thanks, Joshua, for having me.
First of all, are koalas functionally extinct?
They are not.
Okay. So we can breathe a sigh of relief.
Yes.
And what does that term mean anyway, functionally extinct?
Right. So what it means to be functionally extinct is that there may be some individuals left of a species. However, they are not able to necessarily reproduce another generation in order to survive in the long term in the wild. So it's a little different from extinct in that there are still a few left, but they're not able to perpetuate. And that is not the case with koalas.
Right. Kind of the whole children of men thing where there are people there, but they can't perpetuate.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Right.
Where did that story come from about koalas being functionally extinct?
Yeah, so I think we've all sort of seen over the last few weeks those really sad stories emerging from Australia of koalas being found in the wildfires, injured, sometimes dead, sometimes being rescued. And what happened around last weekend, these stories all kind of came to a head when one headline in particular declared that koalas were now functionally extinct because of the fires and that they'd lost 80% of their habitat in these fires. And this story just absolutely took off over the span of a day or two.
What was it in the situation of the koalas that might have led them to declare them functionally extinct in the first place? I mean, was there any evidence that would lead a rational person to that conclusion?
Right. So first of all, you had koalas very much in the news because of what's going on in the fires. So there was that. And then there was a report back in May. One particular koala foundation declared that koalas were approaching the point of being functionally extinct. Now, at the time, this was disputed by many scientists, and this was sort of debunked. But somehow there was mixed messages, it seems like, over the past few weeks. And this story that came out, it was actually in Forbes, must have conflated that May declaration with what was going on now and said that because of the fires, they were functionally extinct. So that's my best guess as to where this came from.
Worth noting, by the way, that Forbes did update its original story and said that the headline and the lead of the story were changed to better reflect the content of the reporting and made some clarifications.
Right.
But even still, koalas are still in danger in terms of their habitat, their livelihood, etc.
Yeah, so there is absolutely a grain of truth to all this. And I think that that's what makes the story so complicated. So koalas are threatened. They're considered vulnerable to extinction by the IUCN, which is the international body that determines where species fall in the spectrum of being endangered. Koalas are threatened by a whole host of issues. So habitat destruction, the degradation of their food sources, yes, wildfires, chlamydia is another thing that affects koalas, and dog attacks, et cetera, et cetera. So they're not doing well overall.
Chlamydia is a sexually transmitted disease between koalas, or?
Yes, sexually transmitted, same as humans, and young koalas can actually get it from their mothers as well.
Now, these wildfires in Australia, I've heard many reports that they are unprecedented, landmark, once in a lifetime. Clarify for us just what's going on with these fires.
Yeah, so according to scientists who are studying these fires on the ground in Australia, this year's fires are unprecedented because of their scale. And this is due to climate change is one major factor. Another major factor is the cessation of traditional Aboriginal fire management methods. So all these things have sort of come to a head. And because of prolonged drought this year, the early fire season in Australia is at a scale that is unprecedented. And it's important to note that this is only spring in Australia. So unfortunately, experts predict that over the next few months, it may get even worse.
And when you say fire season, just to clarify on that, these fires are not unprecedented in and of themselves.
Right.
Fires are part of the natural ecosystem pattern, the annual pattern in Australia, right?
Exactly. But because of, you know, climate change is a major factor here, and because drought is so pronounced this year, these fires are raging at a scale that is unprecedented. And actually, eucalyptus, which is koalas' habitat, they only live in eucalyptus. And eucalyptus is a very fire-adapted species of plant. However, because these fires are so pronounced this year, it's raging at a scale that is unfortunately burning the eucalyptus top to bottom and is impacting the koalas.
And then the eucalyptus has oil within it.
Exactly. So it's very flammable. Although it's sort of counterintuitive. Yes, it's very fire-adapted and it can regrow after normal fire and normal conditions. But when fire is abnormal, as it is right now, it really is very susceptible to burning all the way through.
How are Australians and the Australian government responding to this?
So it's obviously a major crisis. I think a lot of experts that I spoke to for this story are frustrated that the government has actually not taken the climate change element of this seriously. And I think that that is a point of frustration that, you know, many species, including koalas, are now being affected by these unprecedented fires. And environmentalists, wildlife experts are all saying that it's so important now to begin to protect the land for these animals and, you know, to hopefully in the future really address this crisis head on. Because as we know, this is wildfire in 2019 has sprung up all over the world at an unprecedented scale in the Amazon, in California, et cetera. So this is a global crisis.
How is it possible that Australia is not taking super aggressive steps to protect? I would think, me not being Australian, that koalas would be as important to Australia's national character as, say, you know, bald eagles here in the U.S. It's just one of those species you associate with Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually think that that's a huge reason why that they've sort of grabbed attention internationally in these headlines. Because, yes, they are an iconic Australian species. So are kangaroos, though. And so are, you know, other animals. However, kangaroos are able to run and escape the fires just like birds are able to fly away. But koalas are, unfortunately, in this really sort of precarious situation where they don't move fast. They're really slow to try and escape. They climb the tree. And when you have trees burning the whole way through, they're sort of faced with no option but to be injured or sadly die.
What were koalas dealing with before these fires? What were some of the other factors that were impinging on their survival?
Yeah, so koalas have been hard hit for a few decades now. It's mostly habitat loss. So as, you know, urban development is undertaken on the entire eastern coast of Australia, which is koalas' traditional habitat, they've faced a lot of habitat degradation. In some populations, koalas have been reduced by, you know, 25 to 50% over the last few decades. They're also, you know, as cities are encroaching on forest, you have issues with, you know, dog attacks and, of course, disease. So they are hard hit. And so an element, when you have fire like this at the scale that it's happening, especially in northern New South Wales, which is where it's really raging, which is a key koala habitat. So it's really, really affecting that particular population.
Are Australians kind of adapting to this by trying to work around the koala, or have they just kind of decided, well, you know, this is progress and we got to build more homes and this is just kind of the way it's going to be?
I think it's tough. And I think that these headlines are, sorry, I think that this situation has really sort of put it on the forefront that this is sort of a do or die situation at this point. If we want to save koalas and we want to save these species, then, you know, action will have to take place. Yeah, I mean, when it comes to koalas in particular, they are protected by the Australian government. So, for example, it's illegal to kill a koala, but their habitat has not been as protected as some experts would like. So that would be a possible next step.
We're speaking with National Geographic wildlife reporter Natasha Daly. We'll have more in just a minute. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to the 1A podcast. Don't forget to do your part and donate to your local NPR station before the end of the year. And guess what? Supporting public radio just got easier with Text to Give. To get started with your donation to an NPR member station, visit donate.npr.org/1A. Or just text the word give to the number 49648. We'll send you a text message with a link where you can find your local station and make your contribution. Message and data rates may apply. You can visit npr.org/smsterms for privacy and text message terms. So, don't wait. Donate. Do your part in sharing the conversation and supporting the public radio system. Thanks.
Support for NPR comes from Newman's Own Foundation, working to nourish the common good by donating all profits from Newman's Own food products to charitable organizations that seek to make the world a better place. More information is available at newmansownfoundation.org.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're speaking to Natasha Daly, a wildlife reporter for National Geographic. Natasha, koalas get a lot of attention. They are also very, very cute. Now, is that why they're getting the attention? Is it because they're cute?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, this is sort of this perfect storm of, okay, you have this sort of raging, unprecedented natural disaster. You have these adorable animals that people actually think they're bears, but they're not. I think because they have those cute little ears and that human-like face. And
they're marsupials.
So
they're not
marsupials,
bears.
Yes. Right. And then you have these headlines that are basically, as the one we're talking about, that declared these adorable animals that everyone loves are functionally extinct. So it was, I think, when it came to social media, at the point where it sort of hit last weekend, it was this sort of perfect storm of an emotional trigger for people. And so people were really, really reacted to it.
But that's what makes it even more odd to me that the Australian government hasn't pounced on this, because the cute animals are the ones that people tend to call their lawmakers for and say, no, you have to protect otters and dolphins and gray wolf puppies because they're so cute and I want to squeeze them. That's
exactly.
It kind of makes it make less sense to me.
Well, I think, I think you raise a good point. And we will see, I think, as the weeks go by and months, how policy may begin to change around this, especially because now that it's received so much international attention.
Glad to hear from those of you who can speak to this firsthand. Becca emailed, we lived in Adelaide, South Australia from 2011 to 2013 and again from 2017 to 18. And noticed a drastic decrease in koala sightings in and around the city. We would see them up in the trees regularly, and just 4 years later would not see any unless in conservation areas. What about that, Natasha? Conservation areas. How is koala conservation going right now?
Yeah, I think that this is actually one of the main concerns of experts I spoke to for this story, is that, you know, as I sort of mentioned, they are protected as a species, but you have this missing link because their habitat is not necessarily as protected. One expert described it to me as virtually none of it is protected. So I think that this is sort of a key element here, that it's one thing to protect the species and declare them on paper, you know, protected, but if we're not actually protected their habitat, and, you know, if you're going one step further and really cutting into it for development, then that's going to be a major issue going forward.
Stephanie wrote on our Facebook page, I don't care what they are considered. This is horrible. The pain and suffering these animals and other species have gone through for this senseless act. They're living beings, and maybe we should also worry about the humans that started this and how they should be held accountable. I know there are controlled fires and all that, but this is just awful. I'm not sure, Natasha, who you hold accountable for this, because as you mentioned, this is one of the larger impacts of climate change.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, that's a really good point that's raised. It's difficult to point fingers. And I think often in times of crisis like this, especially, you know, environmental crisis, the instinct is to point fingers and to create blame. And in a situation like this, I think it's a really great example of this is a much, much larger issue that needs to be addressed holistically in order for these adorable, vulnerable animals to not, you know, continue to suffer like this in fire.
Karen emailed, climate change is a big reason these fires are continuing, and an increasingly arid environment is contributing to the fuel load. The conservative government is the reason it is not being fully addressed. Secondly, thank you for not calling them koala bears. They are not bears. They are marsupials.
Yes, important point to make.
Zooming out from this a little bit, Natasha, this kind of gets to me at the impact of viral stories on the way we view conservation, the environment, wildlife. It's nice that people are now thinking about koalas in a different way, but I did that just for Karen, just to make her go, ah,
exactly.
But at the same time, the story wasn't quite right. So there's kind of pluses and minuses.
Yeah. I think that's really tough. First of all, it's so important, especially in situations like this, to get the facts right. That's vital, I think, as we continue to report on climate change. And as, you know, it becomes an increasing sort of element of crisis in our, you know, international environment. It's so important to make sure that the stories we're putting out there are accurate, because I think this is a perfect example of how something maybe wasn't intended to be misleading at all. It was absolutely rooted in some sort of truth, but the way it was written and reported wasn't accurate. And what happened was, you know, when people are worked up and it's a very emotional story like this was, people tended to retweet it and, you know, like it. And these things spread. I think good intentions were there. But the issue was that it wasn't accurate, and accuracy is important.
What can be done for the koalas, especially for folks who don't live or vote in Australia?
Yeah. So there are in terms of actually, if you're interested in helping koalas on the ground in this time of crisis, there is one koala hospital, the Port Macquarie Koala Hospital. They are actually actively going out every day rescuing koalas and treating them. You'd be able to look into them if you want to get involved in their efforts. And I think more broadly, it's important. I think this was a great example of how we want to be really conscious and, you know, sensitive to how we are engaging in the process of sharing news. I think that it's vital to be sharing these issues with our family and friends. But we want to make sure that what we're putting out there and what we're contributing to the conversation is accurate and important, because it's vital.
And Macquarie, by the way, is Macquarie. You can find their website, if you want, at koalahospital.org.au, because it is an Australian site, koalahospital.org.au. Briefly, before I let you go, Natasha, this kind of fire costing wildlife habitats, not unique to Australia, I'm sure.
Exactly. I reported a few stories this year, just a few months ago, about wildfire raging in the Amazon affecting species there, including the sloth, which is, you know, so reminds us so much of koalas in some ways, because they're slow. They unfortunately are in peril as well. So this is an international crisis that is important for us to pay attention to.
Natasha Daly, a wildlife reporter for National Geographic. Natasha, thanks for helping set the facts straight, and thanks for talking to us.
Thank you, Joshua.
This conversation was produced by Gabrielle Healy and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.
Rats driving cars, crabs with bellies full of teeth.
Mindy, what in the wow are you talking about?
Guy Raz, I'm talking about all new episodes of Wow in the World every Monday in December.
All new wow?
That's right. Wow in the World from NPR and Tinkercast, a science podcast for families. Listen and share with your friends.